weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Beto da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, October 17th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, the Ireland Women's National Team squad is announced for their upcoming playoff semi-final. We'll hear from Ireland head coach Eileen Gleeson. Anthony Pyne is in studio to go through all of the talking points from the announcement. Bernard Jackman previews this weekend's URC action with another Interpro derby on the cards, while Jeff Shepherd has the latest NFL news with his eye on America. Plus, we continue our build up to Sunday's FAI Cup final in the company of Athlone Town's Roisin Molloy. As always, if you want to have your say on any of the above or anything else besides, you can send us a text on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Welcome along to an hour of sport here on 2FM. Anthony Pyne and Bernard Jackman in studio already. Before we chat to the lads, some news headlines. And high performance director Antonio Moro Giovanni will leave Rowing Ireland after the decision was made not to renew his contract. The Italian was at the helm for the last two Olympiads, where Ireland won four medals, but Moro Giovanni will depart his role by the end of the year when his four-year contract expires. A spokesperson for Rowing Ireland confirmed to RTÉ Sport that the body will now focus on developing a new long-term strategy following the removal of lightweight categories from the Los Angeles 2028 schedule in favour of coastal rowing. Until a new high-performance director is appointed, national lightweight coach Dominic Casey will fill in on an interim basis. In Gaelic Games, Tipperary hurler Dan McCormick has announced his inter-county retirement. The Borrisalee clubman joined the Tipperary panel in 2015 and won two All-Ireland titles, wearing the number 10 jersey in both the 2016 and 29 victories over Kilkenny. McCormick also won Munster titles in 2015 and 16. His last appearance came in the provincial series back in May of this year when Tip lost to Cork. The news comes just over a week after Tip teammate Patrick Bonnermar also announced that he was stepping away. And in association football, former Republic of Ireland international Aidan McGeady has announced his retirement from professional football at the age of 38. First captain in 2004 by Brian Kerr, the Glaswegian went on to earn 93 caps for Ireland, scoring 5 goals and last appearing in the 5-1 loss to Denmark as Ireland fell short of the 2018 World Cup at the playoff stage. And some ongoing football as well. There is Women's Champions League group stage action. Roma lead in Turkey 1-0 against Galatasaray, but there's an Irish aspect to Real Madrid and Celtic. Real Madrid lead by a goal to nil, and Ireland's Caitlin Hayes starting for Celtic, and Saoirse Noonan, who wasn't selected for the Ireland squad, on the bench for Celtic in that one. 22 minutes on the clock. We'll keep you up to date on both of those matches. But as I mentioned, the two lads are here, Anthony and Bernard. Bernard, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Good. Sure. Looking for, yeah, very well, thank you. Already nervous about the League of Ireland tomorrow, so we're going to look forward to the URC to just, you know, get away from that. Looking forward to another Interpro, cracking Interpro to look forward to.
Yeah, it'll be good. Obviously, waiting for the teams to come out. The rumour is Leinster will be much changed.
Okay.
Obviously, they went full strength for Treviso and for Munster, so with the November internationals coming up, There's a pressure on Leo Cullen, obviously, to get game minutes right and not overplay players. So I think there's going to be some new faces. But look, I think Leinster have 30 internationals in their squad. So no matter what 15 they put out, it'll be strong. And it gives an opportunity for some of those fringe players to show their wares. I think Gus McCarthy's going to start at hooker, in my understanding. And Jack Boyle at loosehead. And they're two players that certainly Andy Farrell will have an eye on, Jack Boyle, because of the age profile of the looseheads that they were in Ireland at the moment, with being a lot older, and we're looking for that young gun to come through. And then Gus McCarthy, because obviously the injuries to Rob Herring, Dan Sheen and Ronan Kelleher, you know, the All Blacks match is looming, and we have someone like that, someone like Gus McCarthy, could come in from out of the blue really and be part of the squad. So even within that, apart from the, you know, blue v green, there's going to be individuals that we need to keep an eye on.
Ulster team named as well. We'll get to that a little bit later on when we chat rugby in detail with Bernard. But Anthony Pyne, we're going to start with yourself. Firstly, how are you? You were at the Ireland Pressers today, which was a robust affair, I believe.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Dominated by Eileen Gleeson's response to remarks that had been made by Kieran Kilduff, the Athlone Town manager, earlier in the week in relation to what he perceives as maybe a lack of interest from the senior setup in the domestic players and specifically his players. Athlone, of course, just won the league. They're in this Sunday's FAI Cup final. And Kieran was, you know, he aired some frustrations that, in his opinion, a league that's crammed with young talent isn't perhaps being encouraged from on high. There is just that big gap, Shane, is the bigger issue here. There's a Republic of Ireland under-19s team and then nothing until the senior setup. And the FAI have discontinued home-based training sessions, which they used to hold under Vera Powell and before her Colin Bell, which gave an opportunity for players based here to train under the current Republic of Ireland manager or head coach, and obviously there's nothing there for them now, so there is that void. And Eileen quite passionately refuted some of the things that he said, so it didn't make for quite an interesting press conference.
There are plenty of narratives I do want to discuss with you about the selection of the squad, but let's hear from Eileen Gleeson at today's press conference when our own Tony O'Donoghue put a couple of questions to the Ireland head coach.
Talk to me about Georgia, the opposition. I mean, we've played them before, so clearly you know what they're like.
Yeah.
Have they changed much since the last time?
I mean, like every international country, they're here to, they're in a playoff, so they'll be trying to be as competitive as they can. They've obviously developed over the years in line with their resources and their landscape. So the thing for us in these playoffs is, you know, that we are not complacent and that we don't let complacency or previous results guide preparations. So we've been, you know, promoting that message across the staff and across the players as well. So it's two must-win games, Tony.
You can't but look ahead, though, to the next game. You have to be looking at Slovakia and Wales as well, surely, and keeping an eye on them and their game.
Yeah, well, I mean, the primary focus has to be on these two games. You know, if we start to get too far ahead of ourselves, then the complacency can come in. But obviously, you have, you know, to future plan as well and have simultaneous, you know, the processes going on. But the primary focus is obviously getting these two games, getting over the line with these two games.
How much of a loss will Courtney Brosnan be in the first leg? I mean, she's been so consistent.
Courtney's been brilliant, yeah, and she's obviously the yellow cards have carried forward, but this is what a squad is for. And you know, we've got three keepers in now, so Grace, Sophie and young Katie Keenan, so it's their opportunity now to shine.
And Katie from Athlone Town, that wasn't a response to Kieran Kilduff's criticism?
Absolutely not. I mean, we've, you know, we watch players every single week in the League of Ireland, and I, you know, over 30 years have been the biggest advocate of League of Ireland in its inception at National League and promoting, you know, League of Ireland players being integrated into international pathways. So, you know, statements that we don't watch players are completely inaccurate. In terms of Katie, you know, my assistant Emma has actually attended Athlone's training sessions to watch Katie. We've had Katie in the pre-mini camp in July, so we're watching these players constantly. And you know, winning League of Ireland doesn't negate an immediate call up to senior international football. It's a very, very tough level. It's elite level, and League of Ireland players are in direct, you know, competition with players who are in professional environments and full-time environments. So, you know, the primary message from that is we're constantly watching players.
But Kieran Kilduff's criticism was perhaps that you didn't even pick up the phone to, you know, give him a call.
And what am I calling them about? Like, I'm not selecting his players, so there's hundreds of managers. So I'm speaking to players that we need to, we're watching the players. If I need to ask Kieran anything about a player, I'll pick up the phone and ring him. If he wants to ring. There's nothing stopping. If it wants this dialogue, then pick the phone and call me. You know, I think it's...
Could you not have called him?
For what? Tony's question.
To ask him how Katie's doing?
I just told you. My assistant, Emma Byrne, attended the training sessions. So I'm not sure much more we attended his training session to look at the player. It's pretty, you know, conducive to getting a live view of what your player is doing in your training session. We have her in the camp, so I think the broader message here is we are watching League of Ireland games. I'm attending League of Ireland games. My technical staff are attending League of Ireland games. We're watching games online. We're linking with whoever we need to if we want to ask questions about the players. Managers are free to call me if they want to promote a player, the same way professional managers do. The line is open. So, you know, to say that we're not, you know, looking at League of Ireland players is completely misrepresented.
Were you hurt by the criticism then? Because you've been involved in this game for a long time.
Exactly. So I've been here 30 years. I've committed my whole career to League of Ireland and to the National League here. So, you know, statements to say I don't advocate on behalf of League of Ireland players are completely misrepresentative.
So how would you assess the status of the game, the women's game at League of Ireland level?
The game has moved on over the years, but it's still essentially an amateur league. And for, you know, to play at senior international level, there is natural attrition, you know, of level. We all know there's a difference between League of Ireland to the WSL. You know, that is an objective difference. And we've got players playing in League of Ireland, you've got players playing in the WSL, you've got players at the top of the WSL, you've got players in the middle, and that is your direct opponent to be selected for the national team. But from League of Ireland, we've, you know, integrated players. Erin McLaughlin, Ella Malloy is in. She just moved to Sheffield. Eva Mangan plays with Cork City. She's in. We've had Freya. We've had Ellen. So there is, you know, a commitment to try and continue to look at the players. But there's also a natural objective, you know, note to admit that there's a difference between an amateur level player and a pro level player, and that is we have to pick 23 players, and it's, you know, survival of the fittest. So you can be playing, you can be an excellent League of Ireland player but not a senior international player. You can be an excellent
pro player.
What about
the example of Julianne Russell though? I mean, yes, the difference she made to your team.
She's exceptional. You know, Julie has 70 caps before she's come in to me. So is that not reinforcing the point that we take players, we're happy to have players that are the level and that can sustain the demands of the game at international level in the squad? You know, that is what we want.
A passionate Republic of Ireland Women's National Team head coach Eileen Gleeson speaking to Tony O'Donoghue in the assembled press earlier today. Anthony, I know you were there as well. And there's literally two sides to this story. You can kind of see where Ciarán Kilduff is coming from. You can absolutely understand where Eileen Gleeson is coming from. But I think it just comes back to the point you were making before we heard from Eileen Gleeson there, that this is more of an institutional issue of not having the pathways there and the framework set up to have the home base squad. Because when you look at the team, there's not too many League of Ireland players that would feel extremely hard done by, I would imagine, being left out or omitted. And we do have three players in the squad.
Yeah, look, these things are always subjective. There's other players left out of that squad today. Like Lucy Quinn has just been named the player of the month at Birmingham City. She's had a brilliant start to the season in the Championship. Saoirse Noonan is on the bench tonight at Celtic at Real Madrid. She's had a great start to the season. Emily Whelan is playing really well at Glasgow City. So there's, you know, you can go through it and we'll all have our opinions. I think I can see where both of them are coming from. Like, from Eileen's point of view, over the last year, she's named Erin McLaughlin, Freya Healy, Ellen Dolan, Jess Fitzgerald, Eva Mangan, Julianne Russell, and now Katie Keane. Like, they've all been brought into various squads over the last sort of 12, 13, 14 months under her reign, albeit only really Erin and Julianne have gotten on the pitch. But, you know, she's brought in these young players and given them the experience of training alongside Katie McCabe, Denise O'Sullivan, brushing shoulders with the senior squad. From Ciarán Kilduff's point of view, you know, the women's Premier Division here, it's an amateur league. There's an enormous amount of work and effort going into developing these players, and there's loads of talent. I mean, we see it if you look at the current squad. An awful lot of the players who are full senior internationals now have come from this league, so it's a brilliant breeding ground for talent. And, you know, the likes of Erin McLaughlin has gone across the water. Ellen Malloy, who was named in the squad today, they've gone over to England and done well. Erin's at Portsmouth. Ellen's doing well at Sheffield United. That will continue to happen. You know, when these players, the best of the players in the league, get to 18, 19, a lot of them will be picked up by clubs across the water. But I think at the moment the problem is that the acceleration of the women's game and the improvement in Ireland and then the raised expectations that we have for this senior squad means that there is just a big gap. We have this strong, flourishing Premier Division that's producing good players, but it is an amateur league. Then we have our senior team playing France, England, Sweden, because they went up to League A in the Nations League. Okay, they got relegated, but you know, I'd be willing to put money that they'll get back up to League A by the time the next Nations League comes around.
Yeah.
And they're consistently now pushing to make major tournaments. So it's not realistic to expect players playing in an amateur league to be fit enough and strong enough and ready to come straight into the Ireland fold and have an impact. So you have to be wary of just being tokenistic. You know, it's a serious squad. There's a lot to play for. So really the issue, Shane, I think, is that big gap. You know, that there's been talk for at least a year of the establishment of an under-23s women's team. We have an under-19s team. That's where we go. A very good one. They did really well at the Euros during the summer. The likes of Katie Keane from Athlone Town was involved in that. She was brilliant. They got a point against Spain, a nil-all draw. She was unbelievable in that game, if people remember. But then there's nothing to the senior level. So you need a bridge. You need something in between them. We used to have home-based sessions here under previous managers. Mm. They were discontinued because the FA have changed tack. They want to focus more on specific coaching of elite players between the ages of 14 to 17. This is all part of their football pathways plan. And also, as I said, this under-23s international team, which would serve the players so well, and not just players playing here, even players like, say, Abby Larkin, who may be in and out of the senior team, giving them a taste of international football, but not throwing them completely in at the deep end. So that's where we are. That's where you have these conflicting opinions. I think both of them have a point, and both of them have a good argument. But as I said, there's this purgatory and limbo that needs to be addressed by the FAI. And look, they might say they need more funds and investment to pull this off, but it's definitely an issue.
Mm.
And the longer it goes, the worse and the bigger an issue it will be.
Is that going to be an extremely negative aspect for the League of Ireland? If they're concentrating on coaching for, say, 14 to 17-year-olds, in theory then you are just nurturing the best players. You might get a year in the league, but you're going to go straight over to England then.
Well, I think if there's focused development on the academies, rising tide lifts all boats, you know, it will improve the league. Not all of them are going to go to England. Mm. A lot of them will stick around. The standards will get better. And the more full-time coaches you have across the country, obviously the standard will go up. It will explode. And also you'll potentially be able to offer players a wage that they can be, you know, they can be full-time footballers. That has to be the goal. And, you know, that has been the stated goal from the FAI. But there's investment needed. Look, we see that in the men's game as well, but definitely because the women's game is growing so fast at the minute, it's almost like everyone else is running to try and catch up, and that's across the board. I mean, you go down to grassroots levels, there's clubs that are struggling for pitches or struggling to accommodate the amount of girls that want to play the game, and we could talk all night about this, Shane, but even if you go to down to the DDSL level and the MGL, there's fractures there in terms of certain clubs at underage level not being accommodated in certain leagues because of administrative errors and stuff. That's a whole different kettle of fish. We won't open that kind of worms here.
But we're seeing it on a weekly basis, and it is so disheartening. It's so frustrating. So it's just genuinely disappointing to see young girls miss out on football.
Yeah, well, look, there's fractures and splinters. You know, there is, but there's a pressing need to have some cohesion here, because there's great potential. We can see that. And, you know, I guess for Kieran Kilduff, you know, his frustration is that he is seeing these players that are coming through and representing Ireland at underage teams, not just the under-19s, but below that, 16, 17. So you can see, okay, there's potential here to produce senior internationals. But at the minute, there's just that big jump from the last underage team up to senior level, and we need a bridge.
No, we most certainly do. Just to wrap up the conversation, obviously the girls in green travel to Tbilisi to take on Georgia, the first leg of the playoff semi-final on Friday week, then welcome them to Tala the following Tuesday for the return leg. Heather Payne, Kira Caruso return having missed the last camp with injuries. Injuries rule out Megan Campbell, Jessu, Risha Littlejohn and Jamie Finn, while Emily Murphy is unavailable. But just very briefly, Anthony, I know you have a big write-up on the RT website as well, detailing all of the squad as well. Just Ella Malloy back in the Ireland squad for the first time in 2 years, had a horrible time with injuries. It's brilliant to see Ellen back.
It's brilliant to see her back, Shane. She was a fantastic player in this league, a great example of a young player that everyone could see this talent was coming. She, I think, certainly would have had a good shout of going to the World Cup. if she hadn't damaged her ACL when she did. It was September 2022. She had just been called into the senior squad with Vera Powell and was absolutely flying. She couldn't stop scoring. And unfortunately, it's an all too familiar tale in the women's game where she that dreaded ACL injury. But she is back. She's at Sheffield United. She made a really good start to the season there. Scored a brilliant goal at the weekend against Birmingham. Fantastic individual effort that kind of showcased what she's all about. So, yeah, it is great to see her back. And, you know, wouldn't rule her out getting on the pitch against Georgia at some stage.
Here's hoping. You can listen to live commentary of those playoff semi-final matches here on Extended Soccer Specials. Game on! On 2FM. For now, Anthony Pine, thank you very much for popping into the studio. We are taking a short ad break and then we're going to chat rugby in the company of Bernard Jackman.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to rugby in the company of Bernard Jackman, because there's some tasty fixtures in the URC this weekend. We have an Interpro at West, Connacht host Leinster on Saturday evening, 7:35 for that one. Munster are in South Africa to take on the Stormers at 5 o'clock on Saturday. But tomorrow, Ulster host Ospreys at 7:35. And Ulster have been boosted by the return of several key players for tomorrow's URC clash with Ospreys in Belfast, with Stuart McCluskey among those to come into the starting team. The Ireland international missed the last two games due to ankle and knee injuries picked up against the Lions 3 weeks ago, but comes in as one of nine changes from last week's 32-27 win against Connacht. Nine changes, Bernard, but you would imagine they will be hopeful to carry the momentum from last week.
Yeah, and nine changes, but actually they actually think they look stronger on paper. It's a very nice looking Ulster team. You know, you've got likes of Cormac Isichuku and Dave McCann, who are away with Emerging Ireland, who I think will be big parts of this Ridgie Murphy rebuild. Two outstanding players. They've won their first two home games, obviously beat Glasgow round one and then beat Connacht last week. And the Ospreys are coming here really under-resourced. They've an unbelievably difficult injury crisis. The Welsh regions all have very small squads this year to try and fit into the reduced salary cap that's in Welsh rugby, and already the Dragons have had to take in two players on loan because of injuries, and the Ospreys have kind of got into the club game in the region, semi-pro players to try and get together 23. So from Richie Murphy's point of view, they'll be looking at this as a game where they can, you know, get their third win at home in Ravenhill, probably looking at a 5-pointer, and if they do, you know, 3 wins out of the first five, given you know, as I said, it's a rebuild, I think Richie Murphy would be in a really good place, and I can't see any other result than an Ulster win tomorrow night and an Ulster 5-pointer.
How heartening is it for Richie Murphy that he's able to come off the back of an Interpro victory, make nine changes, and for you to be able to say, geez, it's nearly stronger on paper as well, to have that bit of strength and depth that perhaps wasn't there?
Yeah, it wasn't there, and I think the South African tour, which came round two, round three for them, really came at the right time. I think he treated like an extended pre-season as such. He gave a lot of youngsters a game, particularly against the Bulls. Okay, they got nothing out of that game, but it meant that they were able to be strong last week against Connacht and be strong again against the Ospreys. And this year, you know, there's no doubt Richie Murphy will box clever. You know, are they going to win the Champions Cup? No. Are they going to win the URC? It's unlikely. But there's certain milestones that he'll want to hit. And I think being unbeaten in Ravenhill for as long as possible, obviously qualifying for Europe again, being in the playoffs are realistic targets. And I think he's setting his team up to do that.
Okay, well, we all signs pointing towards an Ulster victory tomorrow evening in Belfast against the Ospreys. Second place Glasgow and Munster both begin 2-week tours of South Africa as they head for the Sharks and Stormers respectively. What response are we going to see from Munster now on Saturday?
Yeah, look, I've looked back at the Munster-Leinster game a few times, and Munster did a huge amount of right in it. Like, they asked and caused more problems for Leinster's defence than normally happens, but unfortunately once they got into the 22, their accuracy level or their power game wasn't at the level that they needed to be to turn that into scores. And they also had a line-out that malfunctioned badly, and that's something that's been an area of concern for the last 2 years. So, you know, that's going to be something that's going to take a priority for them in terms of what they're working on this week. The Stormers are in a bit of decline. Got hammered by a bad Edinburgh team at the weekend. Okay, they're gone back now to South Africa, so home comforts. But, you know, at the start of the season, over the summer, you would have said the Stormers and the Sharks are the two hardest games in South Africa. Whereas, well, what we've seen for the first four rounds, it's not. It's the Lions and the Bulls are the two top teams. So I think it's obviously at sea level. I think Munster will take heart from their second half display against Leinster. Couple of bodies back. And I think this is a game they can win. And probably could do a winning, obviously, having slipped up against Zebra. They kind of need to get a win away from home quickly just to make up those points. So I think they'll be in okay shape. They've obviously gone to Cape Town before and won, and won the final down there. They won't have any fear. And yeah, there was elements of that performance against Leinster that there was lots to like about.
When you go over to South Africa, and obviously Munster, they've done it in the past, and as you mentioned, they've won in the past as well. Two wins from two going over to South Africa at this time. Does it have a factor, or does it matter really when you go on this trip?
Yeah,
this
I think, look, it is a hard place to go.
Would you rather get it out of the way?
Yeah, I think it's good to get it. I think it's good to get it out of the way now. And particularly because I think Munster have a realistic chance of winning. Now the Sharks have picked a very strong team for this weekend. The likes of Khaleesi's back, and their summer recruitment is now starting to pay off in terms of what they're able to pick. But they haven't put performances together. Obviously, Connacht beat them, etc. And I think that this game for Munster, this tour, is coming at the right time because, you know, they're match ready now for most of the players. It's a chance to build, do stuff off the field as well. But also, I think they're getting two teams who are vulnerable, and you know, maybe that's not going to be the case a little bit later. Maybe the Sharks a little bit later in the season are going to be a lot more difficult. The Stormers might be out of this rut they're in at the moment. So yeah, I think Graham Rowntree will relish the opportunity to get back down there early, hopefully get some points in the bag, and not have that trip to face later on when maybe resources are a little bit more stretched.
I do want to pick your brain on Connacht Leinster, just very briefly, just on the South African teams as well. There's three unbeaten teams in the URC, one of which is Leinster, but the Lions and Bulls, as you mentioned, are the two stronger teams, which is a bit of a surprise as well. What has kind of gelled?
The Bulls have recruited very well. Obviously they blew it last year and the year before, so the Bulls have been in the final against the Stormers, lost the final to Glasgow in Pretoria. So they're sick of not having converted what they see as being real opportunities, and they've recruited again. There's consistency of coaching there. The Lions are probably the more interesting one in that you know, they're a very young team for a couple of seasons, very erratic, got some confidence by getting to the final of the Currie Cup, and have just caused lots of teams lots of problems. They play very different than everybody else, very loose, very fast, very explosive. And this is the first summer that they haven't lost their best players. I think they've got a little bit more financial security. So for the previous couple of years, whoever performed very well for the Lions got picked off by the Sharks, the Stormers, or the Bulls, whereas this summer they managed to keep the majority of their squad and they're getting the benefits from it. But look, I think on paper you have to say that the Sharks and Stormers eventually will get it right. I mean, the Stormers have a track record in this competition. The Sharks won the Challenge Cup last year, won the Currie Cup, and I would have thought they were set to go well early in the URC. It hasn't really happened for them. But you looking at the quality they have, it would be a massive shock if they don't turn around at some stage.
Still very early days. Sure, we're only in round five. You mentioned at the top of the show then, obviously we don't have confirmed team news. It is a Saturday evening kickoff, but we're expecting a good few changes for Leinster. For Connacht, they're going to be bitterly disappointed in the manner of defeat, and obviously finishing with 14 men is far from ideal. Perhaps that was the key turning point as well. So what's going to occur in this contest, I suppose?
Look, they're doing a huge amount right. I think the biggest issue we have with... The Sharks game showed they have a bit of character because they were, 21 points down at halftime. So that's a real positive for me, because there was times over the last couple of years where you felt if they had a setback, if they went
mentally fragile,
mentally behind, they would just cave in, right? And so that would be really pleasing for Pete Wilkins, their coach. Yes, there's two games that they've played where they should have won. You know, or sorry, could have won. They could have beaten Munster in round one. And they could have easily beaten Ulster. And the Josh Murphy red card was a factor. Josh Ioane missing touch from a penalty that, you know, their maul has been really strong this year, which again is something that they've worked on. It wasn't a factor last year. So there's still a question mark around them mentally. And this Leinster second choice team, which I think we are going to see, have been able to bar last year. Last year, that's why Leinster didn't have a home draw. They had to go to the Bulls. Was their second choice team wasn't as good at getting wins during the regular season as the previous couple of seasons. But I think there's a little bit more of an edge to Leinster, and I'm fascinated to see how they go. But I think Connacht have to fancy their chances based on the bits and pieces they've shown over the first four games. There has been, you know, lots to like about them this year. They look like a better team, and obviously Ben Murphy's getting the headlines. He's been outstanding, but Kyle Ford off the bench, you know, Mac Hansen's starting to pick up a little bit of form. Cordeiro's getting more game time. Their pack, as I said, they're turning those 5 metre lineouts into points, whereas last year they were quite wasteful there. So there is a lot to like about them. So I think Connacht would expect to win this game, and if they do win it, it's been a very, very good start, because the two games they lost, they managed to get 2 points in both losses. So, you know, points wise they've been in a really good position after five rounds.
They can score tries, they can attack well. Can they, I suppose, unlock the frailties that we've seen in Leinster's defence?
Yes, absolutely. I think they're one of the best coached attacking sides. Mark Sexton has even more of a bigger role this year, and they're so well drilled technically, tactically. You would have imagined they've seen some big opportunities that Munster exploited, and again, like, or jumping to conclusions here, but I think there will be some change in that Leinster backline, and that creates opportunities as well. You know, so, you know, Leinster will have reviewed the opportunities they gave Munster and have a plan to fix those, but it'll be different personnel and, you know, trying to build combinations as you go in 1 week is quite difficult, whereas I'd imagine Connacht would be a lot more settled side. So yeah, this is a big game for Connacht. On form, they've probably shown enough that they can win, but for them to win, I think they have to really put doubt in this Leinster team's mind, and I think that's the disappointing thing for Munster. They gave Leinster such a soft lead. Benetton gave Leinster a soft lead. Edinburgh, Leinster were always in control. Dragons, Leinster were always in control. So we don't know what Leinster will be like in adversity. And obviously, you know, we saw them against the Bulls last year. We saw them against Toulouse, not being able to close it out. So it's not a knockout rugby, but there's plenty that makes this game fascinating to watch on Saturday night.
Okay, good stuff. Just a note, the draw for the Women's Rugby World Cup is at 7 p.m. this evening, just when we come off air. From an Irish perspective, just briefly, Bernard, coming off the back of the WXB campaign, there seems to be a bit more positivity surrounding.
It's a different game. It's incredible how quickly things have turned around. It just shows you how sport can be so fickle, and how the mindset and the confidence level and the whole momentum can be so fickle. They've gone from 11th, I think, to 6th in the world rankings, which is phenomenal. And this World Cup draw is a World Cup draw that we're now looking forward to, rather than maybe crossing our fingers and hoping we get a little bit of luck. And I think that's testament to the work that the coaches and the players have done to change our whole mindset around the path or the journey this Irish women's team is on, and fair play to them.
Okay, great stuff. Lots to look forward to. Bernie Jackman, thank you as always. Great chatting. Just to update you on the score of the Women's Champions League, Caitlin Hayes playing for Celtic. It's halftime and Real Madrid lead in Madrid by 1-0. Roma 2-0 away to Galatasaray. We're taking a short break, and then we're going to chat to Athlone Town's Roisin Molloy as we continue our build-up to Sunday Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup Final.
Game on.
Football.
Now, we are continuing our build-up to Sunday Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup Final in Talla Stadium. And I'm delighted to say that Athlone Town's Roisin Molloy joins us on the line now to look ahead to the big one on Sunday. Roisin, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Very much looking forward to what will hopefully be a cracker of a contest and a great atmosphere and a great crowd in Talla Stadium. Listen, Roisin, before we look ahead to the FAI Cup Final, news today with the Ireland squad being announced and a call-up for your teammate, Katie Keane. How pleased are you to see, firstly, an Athlone player being rewarded for their performances this year, and how deserving is the recognition for Katie?
Yeah, I'm absolutely delighted for we all are from Athlone. So proud of her, and she really, really deserves it. Like, she's had a brilliant season, considering she's only just turned 18 in the summer. Like, she's so much potential, and but she works so hard for it, and yeah, it's so deserved for Katie.
Yeah, it is great to see the potential that Katie has, and so many other players in the League of Ireland as well, and Julianne Russell, Eva Mangin getting included in the League of Ireland squad. And there is a narrative, or there was a narrative, particularly with the home-based training sessions being disbanded, and for League of Ireland players playing at their optimum levels, are they somewhat being overlooked from the national team?
It's hard to know. I think it's brilliant to see the three girls included in the squad today, and so deserved from all of them. I think to see Julianne's performances in the last two games were brilliant, and the girls that have been playing well have been rewarded, so it's deserved for them.
Yeah, great to see Ellen Malloy back as well after a tired time with injuries. But listen, if we turn our attention back to Athlone, and what is the feeling like for yourself securing that first ever league title for the club?
I think that was massive for everyone in the club, and we really enjoyed celebrating that on the Saturday night, and it's been a brilliant season for everyone. But and then obviously we have to turn our focus back to the cup this week, but it was a huge achievement for everyone at the club, and a lot of hard work went into that, I suppose, in the background and on the pitch and from the management. So it was a brilliant way to end the league season with the title.
So league champions now, current cup holders, how much does that give you the upper hand mentally against Shells on Sunday?
I don't know, it's going into a cup final, I think anything can happen. It's obviously we know the quality that Shells have, and coming up against them the last 2 years in the cup final, I think we each have won in the last 2 years, so we're all feeling very confident, I suppose, after to win in the league, and we have the belief within the group, but we know how much of it challenge we're going to get and how much Shells are going to be up for it. But yeah, we're really looking forward to it.
When you reflect on that league, I think that win against Shells and Talk was such a key moment in the season. So now, in terms of the challenge that you're expecting on Sunday, what do you expect from Shells?
A really tough game. I expect they're going to come out and try and start really fast. But yeah, we'll have to respond to that. We know they're probably feeling a little bit of hurt after losing the league in the last two games, but we'll be expecting a really tough game, and we know the quality that they have. Like, the players, there's a massive respect there from us for them and what they've done in the game in the last few years. So yeah, I think the rivalry between the two teams has been great for the league, and we're expecting a really tough game.
Yeah, it has been a case of you're really pushing each other, and I'm sure they're aware of the quality of your team as well. Like, what's been key to Athlone's success this season?
I think when Kieran came in last summer, there was a new professionalism within the group, and just a new mentality. He's obviously done so much in the game, played in a lot of big games and won a lot, so that winning mentality was huge for the group. And I think just the togetherness within the group as well. Like, we lost a lot of girls to injury, but like, losing them just kind of galvanised the group, and we all just wanted to do it for the girls that we lost then. And yeah, I think there's been a lot of different factors that have come together to help the success this year. But yeah, it's been a good year.
Just before I do let you go, Roisin, just the remarkable rise of women's football in Athlone town. I know you've been there for a couple of years. Can you feel that within the town itself, and there's more support forming for the club?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the last 2 years, I suppose winning the cup definitely helped that. But even around the town, so many more people recognise us, and the sport's been huge, and we hope that they'll all come up to support us on Sunday, and we know there's a big crowd coming, so definitely been felt around the town, and we hope that continues to grow.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck come Sunday. As I mentioned, it should be a cracking contest in Talla Stadium, and if you can't make it to Talla Stadium, there will be live coverage on Radio 1's Sunday Sport. For now, Roisin Malloy of Athlone Town, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Football.
Game on.
Eye on America.
Now, with our Eye on America, Jeff Shepherd joins us to chat NFL. Shep, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Shane. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm okay. I'm over the loss of the Buffalo Bills piling further misery on my beloved Jets, and we will get to some news lines surrounding the Jets. But let us begin our conversation with the Saints-Broncos game, because you'll be heading over to that one, and you'll be welcoming back Denver head coach Sean Payton with open arms, Shep, won't you?
Well, look, I mean, it's kind of hard to hate the guy, you know. I mean, I get it. It's the nature of sport. You know, he's not with us anymore, so therefore, you know, you got to boo him. But I mean, the guy was the most successful coach of my lifetime for the Saints, and you know, really brought us consistent winning, really, again, for the first time in my lifetime. And I'm not young, Shane. So, you know, I mean, just consistent winning, you know, multiple division championships, multiple playoff appearances, two appearances in the NFC Championship game, and ultimately the Super Bowl championship, you know, in February of 2010. Interestingly enough, going on really right about now over in New Orleans, you know, future Hall of Fame quarterback Drew Brees is having a luncheon. He is going to be getting inducted into the Saints Ring of Honor tonight, okay. which is kind of like the you know, the Saints Hall of Fame, basically. And so they're doing this tonight with Sean Payton being back in town. And, you know, I was jokingly, you know, talking about the fact that, you know, the number one reason Saints fans are going to the game tonight is to see Drew Brees. And the number two reason is to go see Sean Payton. I don't even know if the Saints are the third reason. I mean, it's, you know, they've lost four in a row and are really beat up. I think they've got 17 players on the injured list going into the game tonight. You know, I mean, you know, football's such a physical game, and, you know, to play on Sunday and then to turn around and play on Thursday, just really, really difficult. But, I mean, look, I had this game circled as soon as it was announced. I was like, there's no way I'm missing this one. You know, it's a work night. I don't care. Even if I only stay for a half. I want to be there to see Sean Payton again, and then obviously to see Drew Brees as well, who's they brought me so much joy for nearly two decades.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. What's better than actually seeing some live sport as well? I mean, so yeah, I hope you enjoy that one later on this evening. Shep, talk to me about a couple of big NFL trades this week. And if we begin with the Raiders trading Davante Adams to the Jets, reuniting him with former Green Bay teammate Aaron Rodgers. This is just a match made in heaven.
Yeah, you look, you know, Shane, I mean, you've been watching this. The Jets offense has kind of been stop and start this season, you know, and really had an opportunity Monday night against the Bills. They get another Hail Mary from Aaron Rodgers, who may be the greatest Hail Mary thrower in the history of the NFL. But they just come up short. You know, they miss a couple of field goals. And this, it seems like these discussions were in the works for a couple of weeks now. Davante Adams had signaled he wanted to go somewhere besides Las Vegas. And he wanted to go play for a quarterback that he knew. Well, he had experience with Aaron Rodgers and experience with Derek Carr. So it was the Jets or the Saints. And then Derek Carr got hurt, and I think the Jets were probably always his number one spot to land. And so, you know, he just gets added to this, you know, this offense with a plethora of weapons besides Rodgers and Breece Hall, the running back, and Garrett Wilson, the wide receiver. I mean, there's no reason this team shouldn't be scoring, you know, 30, 35, 40 points a game just with the weapons. And the AFC East is wide open, you know. So there's an opportunity there. I think he's going to be a major addition to that team. And, you know, I know there's another one you wanted to talk about, Amari Cooper getting traded from the Browns to the Buffalo Bills. And he has got to be thinking, you know, he just hit the big time because he goes from one of the worst offenses in the league with quite possibly the worst quarterback the way he's been playing in Deshaun Watson to Buffalo and Josh Allen, you know, who could very well want to be in the MVP this season. And you know, they're favorites to, you know, go make a deep run in the playoffs. So, you know, he's on a terrible team on Monday. And by the end of the day on Tuesday, hey, I'm going to play for, you know, maybe the one or the two seed in the AFC this year. So, and he'll have an immediate impact. He becomes the best receiver on that team by far.
Okay. Interestingly, you mentioned the Hail Mary that that Rodgers threw, and there's been, perhaps you might call it a conspiracy theory, but there's been narratives really that if you focus on that, Mike Williams running the wrong route basically, and then Mike Williams is out the door, and then you bring in Adams, who like no other receiver has caught the ball more for a touchdown from Rodgers than Adams. But does it kind of put to bed any rumours in that regard of player power and too much player power if this move was in the pipeline for a couple of weeks?
I don't know. And when I say that, I meant it from the Adams side. That's the side that I meant it from. He had signaled to the Raiders he was ready to get out of town because they're struggling. They've got a you know, young coach, bad quarterback play. He's not getting utilized. He's a big contract burden on them. I think both teams were looking for it. He had basically – and he was – you know, he had a hamstring injury, and you can't see me put my fingers in quotes because this is radio, but, you know, he had a hamstring injury. Well, you know, he'll be playing here pretty soon. So I think it was more about that. Look, in the NFL, the players don't have nearly as much power as they do in the NBA. I mean, the NBA, you can make things happen kind of overnight if you've got enough sway. It doesn't really work like that in the NFL.
Okay. Well, what a debut scenario for Adams as the Jets travel to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers on Sunday night. And hopefully we will turn the corner, but who knows. Jeff Shepherd, talk to me about Tom Brady, because his investment in the Las Vegas Raiders has been officially approved 5% stake. And we were talking about rumours and narratives and perhaps unlikely scenarios, but there has been a couple of online articles. Might his first Raiders move be Bill Belichick as head coach?
Well, I mean, look, I will never say never to anything. You know, what's interesting about this, Shane, is that you know, so he's a broadcaster now, and there's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of things he's not really going to be able to do with the broadcast now, because he's now a part owner of this team. Like, he's not always going to be able to go to like the practices the day before and always talk with the players and the coaches and just kind of see how they're running things. It's interesting. It's just, you know, it's not really something that we've had to confront over here. You know, above, you know, the NFL wants to be above board, Shane. And again, I'm putting my fingers in quotes there. but look, I mean, look, I think Bill Belichick is going to get paid a lot of money to go be a coach slash general manager somewhere in the NFL, and probably pretty soon. You know, I was just talking to Laura Lee, a producer. She's heading over to the game to go see the Jags and the Patriots this weekend. That's, you know, she may be seeing Brad Peterson's last head coaching appearance with the Jaguars this week. The Jets have already fired their coach. You know, there's other coaches. Every year, you know, five or six guys get let go. So Belichick will have an opportunity to pick from. Does he want to be a coach? Does he want to be a general manager? Does he attempt to try to do both like he was doing in New England? I don't know if he's going to want to do that, but the Raiders will certainly be, you know, a potential landing spot for him.
Okay. Interesting that you did mention the final London game of the season, of course, takes place this Sunday. Jaguars welcoming the Patriots to, well, welcoming, they are playing in Wembley Stadium, to be fair. But this brings in news lines today, and Minister Catherine Martin, who's basically our Minister for Sport, Shep, who has said the NFL game is under active consideration. There was a government briefing, basically, that there's a new policy aiming to attract mega sporting events, really. Yeah. And there was a quote as well from Roger Goodell, who has said that I've no doubt we will be playing in Ireland. I don't know if it'll be next year, but it's coming soon. Like, how realistic is this, do you feel?
Oh, look, I think it's absolutely realistic. I mean, and in that article where Goodell talks about it being a no doubt, you know, he references that. I mean, he's quoted as saying the Steelers want to play there. You know, so, I mean, I think that's a no brainer. I mean, if you and I have talked about this, I mean, we've been talking about the Steelers in Ireland on this show for years now. And so I think that's absolutely the team that you would want to have involved. And quite honestly, it doesn't even matter who they play against. The Steelers in America have such a nationwide following. It's not like you'd just be pulling fans from Pittsburgh. You know, it's not like Jacksonville, where there's only fans in Jacksonville and maybe in North Florida. The Steelers are a nationwide franchise when it comes to fan base. They're like the Dallas Cowboys. They're like the San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers. They could fill the Aviva or Croke Park with their own fans themselves. They wouldn't even need to worry about having fans, you know, from all over America coming to watch them. So it's a no-brainer that the Steelers would be one of the teams. I think if you put the Steelers and the Giants, or the Steelers and the Patriots playing in Ireland, I mean, you could sell out the game three times if you wanted to, you know. And we've seen the success that the college football games had at the beginning of the season. It's been unbelievable. And, you know, that's going to continue to go on. You know, my school, LSU, keeps talking about how they want to get a game in Ireland as well. And so I just, you know, are you going to play six games a year like you're doing in London? Probably not anytime soon. But I think if you can start getting in the rotation to where you're having a game there every year, every other year, every 3 years, I think that's you knock that out the park.
Yeah. Just to play devil's advocate, is it not too much of a similar market to London, and even geographically close? Perhaps that the NFL might want to explore more mainland Europe a bit more, or, as you say, if it is just kind of a once-off, once a year, once every 2 years, that might be the avenue in.
So they're playing, you know, they open the season down in Brazil with the Patriots, I mean, excuse me, the Packers and the Eagles. They're playing a game in Germany. They're playing, you know, multiple weeks in a row now. They're playing in England. And they're going to play in Madrid, Spain, more than likely next year. I think if you take one of those London games and move it into Dublin for the first attempt, and just look, they didn't know everything that they've done in London has been an experiment. All right, we're going to do one game. Okay, now we're going to try two games. Okay, now we're going to try like 3 weeks in a row, and they're sellouts, and they're sellouts. And, you know, Tottenham gets the new stadium. And so and everything that they've done, it's been slow. It's been, you know, well thought out, and it's all worked so far. So I think the Irish football fan base would be big enough to support both the college game and the NFL game there, plus all the Americans that are coming over. I think it's a win-win.
Oh, for sure. More live sport, the better. Listen, Shep, enjoy the match tonight. Great chatting to you, as always. And we'll speak again next Thursday. That is all we have time for. A massive thank you to Ronan Lawler and Laura Lee Davis for working on this evening's show. The new music show is up after the news with Dermot O'Brien, so do stay tuned to 2FM. Marie Crowe is back on Game On at 6 o'clock tomorrow, so do tune in for that one. I shall speak to you on Monday in the company of Ruby Walsh. So for myself and all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. 2FM.